Hi, and welcome to Entrepreneurship with Christo. Today, I have the privilege of interviewing Mr. Steve Dowling, founder and director of Grant Helper. So Steve established his grant assistance business only a few years ago and has enjoyed extraordinary success. I think the conversation is important within the context of entrepreneurship because accessing capital from various sources is obviously a key activity when you're starting up a business, and grants certainly in this country are a consideration. Not for everyone, of course, but certainly in some circumstances, grants are an important part of the portfolio of options for you. And certainly there are some great grant assistance businesses out there, and certainly my take on Steve Dowling is he's one of them. So please enjoy my conversation with Steve Dowling, and if you're not interested in Nepal and hiking up in the Himalayas, you can skip the first 5 minutes. Enjoy my conversation with Steve Dowling from Grant Helper. Everest Base Camp, okay.
Each time.
So tell me, was that worthwhile? I heard some. I've never done it on purpose. I didn't do it. I didn't do it the second time because I couldn't. But I didn't do it the first time because I just heard the trip from Kathmandu to base camp was pretty ordinary, and then but every man and his dog was sort of doing it, and I just didn't want to be part of the herd. So I went to Annapurna, and I was completely alone, and I had the most amazing time. Obviously not as high, but I, you know, I think about 7 days hiking with just me and the Sherpa. It was just amazing, and I swear, Steve, to this day I have moments where I feel kind of, you know, overwhelmed with life and whatever, and I just remember sitting on a porch in this you would have seen these, the little shack where these little rooms could basically fit two bedrooms, you could touch each other. And I was just watching Annapurna and the wind licking off it in the moonlight. And I find a real peace there. I just think, what a precious memory to have.
When I first went to Nepal in 2012, and it was really the first big hike that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And it was a point in my life where I had a sort of a life-changing event. Right. And but when I went back in 2018, one thing I noticed was that the landscape had changed a lot, and there was a lot more obviousness about it having been traversed.
Right.
And the tracks were much more widespread. There was that lesser feeling of the nature being there than it was when I was there in 2012. And that was the thing that kind of left in my memory of how barren and overworked the land had become.
Right.
So it's that really, you know, the touristy thing that happens. I've never been to other parts of Nepal, but there's still a chance, I guess.
I mean, Pokhara is, I don't even think, an hour flight. In fact, the flight over I took in 98 to Pokhara, okay, so that's a long time ago, was in this DC-3 right. aircraft, you know, the old dodo birds with the propellers. And I remember the door to the cockpit was sort of floating open, and I was in A1. Not that was anything special. Everybody was economy there. But I was in A1, so I had this clear view, and I could see this young guy. He wasn't 20, right? He wasn't 20, trying to come in and land at Pokhara Airport, and I could see the runway sort of flying left and flying right. And I could see this massive Rolex on his on his hand, which is bigger than he was, flopping around. And I thought, I'm going to die. this could be it. But Pokhara was a...
Well, the airport... the airport going into oh, I forget the name of the place, but on the way to base camp, it's a pretty short runway, so it can be a little bit scary.
Yeah, is that famous one? That's really, you know, if you get it wrong, you're fucked.
It's so famous, I've forgotten what it's called. But anyway, it's the one.
There's a commonality between.
Interesting, interesting times. I think both times I went with fairly large groups, and I think if I ever did go back, I'd probably go back on a more sort of personal level and spend less time rushing to get to the destination like we did, and more time just sort of chilling out and enjoying the environment.
Definitely. I was fortunate enough in 98, Kathmandu was untouched. It was bicycles, it was clear skies, it was now it's bicycles and smog and lineups for fuel.
Terrible. That's another aspect of visiting Nepal a second time that was really noticeable. The first time, the city was quite vibrant and active, and the second time was after the floods.
Right.
So, there was a lot of devastation. The airport's called Lukla, by the way.
Oh, right. What is it, Lukla?
Yeah.
Right.
Lukla. Yeah, okay. That's right.
Okay. I think we've got into the good stuff. Would you like to just quickly introduce yourself to our swath of listeners, who Stephen Dowling is, and tell us a little bit about the work that you do in the grant writing space, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, okay. So, Christo said, I'm Steve Dowling, and I operate a small business, a bit of a solopreneur, I guess, called Grant Helper. And I established Grant Helper in 2020 on the wave of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I was doing consulting since 2013 when I left corporate life, and from then through to 20, I'd worked with other consultants and then for 3 years on my own doing export marketing, business development. But then when COVID came, those kind of gigs just sort of vaporized.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd been a sort of sidekick of grants along that period. And then I was faced with no income for a couple of months in that year, and having to make the decision about what do I do going forward. And so from that beginning of nothing, basically, my partner and I were kind of brainstorming what to do. And we came up with this idea that maybe the grants is worth having a crack at, and seeing whether, we could make something out of that, or whether I could make something out of that.
Yep.
And we brainstormed a few names on the balcony with a bottle of red wine. And then I took off from there, basically. And now, 4 years into the journey, it's been a really interesting journey, and things are settled down, and it's going viably now.
Great, that's right. So I guess was it a bit of a splutter start, where you were trying to work out what's going to work from getting the message out and hitting the right target audience.
I was fortunate to have a really good copywriter that I connected with on LinkedIn. And one of the first things I wanted to do as part of this venture was to write an ebook.
Mm-hmm.
And, use that as a lead magnet, but produce something that was better and more comprehensive, and, like you do when you're trying to marry up against the competition.
Yeah.
And so, and he introduced me to a couple of guys who one was a designer, one was a developer, and they helped me do the website. And with those guys' help, they really helped me fine-tune my focus to this kind of solo grants focus.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before I was doing sort of different things, and my positioning was sort of like all over the place. And so we were able to really clarify the message around grants and You know, helping people win government grants became the slogan. It's slightly expanded now, but from that, that was the real driving force. So everything around the website, you know, who we are, what we do, how we do it, became connected to that direction. And we developed some insights, which are kind of like small guides on various topics around grants. We created a bit of a directory, which is more for SEO purposes, but it's sort of blossomed off into something that's actually quite a valuable resource now, to the extent where there's almost 500 grants listed in there.
Right.
And we've got to a point, I've got to a point now where we are, I've got a VA working with me, coming up to 2 years with the VA, and that VA took over handling a lot of the marketing in terms of publishing posts. We've got the MailChimp set up. We send out a weekly blast, and we're doing a few other things around marketing and SEO.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we've got to a point where we're kind of taking that up another level and going to be taking the kind of core service of end-to-end grants and unpacking it a little bit and offering a service level that is something that people who don't want the whole service can access. So they just want to check their readiness,
mm-hmm.
or say they're looking for a grant and they want to find a grant, we can also help them in that area. Or if they want to review, or if they just want to talk strategy about how to do something related to grants. So we'll be kind of offering that, plus some online courses and free webinar playbook series and an accelerator course. So all these things are kind of in play at the moment and will be in place by then. So then we take the whole kind of grant focus and turn it into a, for some people, a learning experience and a transformation experience that they can access information. So it becomes a resource,
right,
more than just a consulting service.
Sure. So are you trying to grow the business in terms of getting more people hired or contracted to help you, or are you going to stay with the key man and just the solo? I don't really like the word solopreneur because you never really need somebody, but it really, with technology now, I just imagine this super empowered individual, and I steal that from a great book that I read decades ago called The Lexus and the Olive Tree, where that foresaw this technological change coming over these decades. We have so many things, and before we met today, I jumped on ChatGPT and I had an idea around a campaign for this other business that I'm spinning up, and I just prompted it and I said, look, and it just put together an extraordinary campaign that target. Mm-hmm. I also gave it an avatar that I've got of the particular clients, and off we go. Mm-hmm. My point is that we've got tools at our disposal just over the last few years that really give us power, and we don't need to take a punt, a $50,000 or $100,000 punt on an employee. And if you do hire
totally
someone,
agree with you.
If you do hire someone, that's great. But you'll hire someone at a role that you can't do with technology, right?
I think I am really enjoying the opportunity to sort of work in my own pace, and I have really adopted a lot of technology in the last year or so. Back in 2017, I did have somebody under my wing, a graduate for a couple of years. And whilst they were useful and, there's also a lot of sort of time absorbed. I think one of the biggest problems is that as a grant consultant, grant writer, depending on the task at hand, there's a kind of certain way that you do it. And it's a very personal thing for clients. You know, We get to know each other. I basically undress them in terms of their business. Mm. And, you know, it can be a bit invasive, sure. But it's necessary in order to get to the core of what makes the business tick.
Yep.
And some people, look, 99% of the people, they're very open and transparent, and you get the odd one that is a bit guarded. But that kind of experience of working with the clients that I've developed in these last 4 years is not something that's really easily transferable
right.
to another person who could offer the service at the same personalized level with the same kind of effort of, you know, thinking. Like, I go home at night sometimes and think about the clients overnight, and you know, wake up the next morning and I've got a solution for whatever problem it was that I was tackling. So it's, for someone else to come into the business and work alongside me, it'd have to be some sort of delegated role that was supporting the endeavors that I was doing, and that might work. And over these few years, I've had people from Sidekicker help me to right. collect blogs, to do transcriptions, and so on. And then I stepped up to hire a VA, and then, you know, the VA took on some of those responsibilities, and now the VA's really, really kind of switched on. And we're using technology to help us do certain things. And when you speak of ChatGPT, I've been closely monitoring what's going on there, reading a few articles over the last year and a half, and playing with it at a number of different levels across the business. And we've found that we can use that sort of technology to really help us become more efficient in areas like publishing information on grants. And we can feed it the guidelines or website pages now, and it can help us summarize those. And then, of course, the key is taking what it produces and then turning it into something right. slightly more personalized, or, you know, checking that it's aligned properly. It, you know, chat is sort of, in my mind, only 80%, maybe less,
yep.
The way there in terms of being able to really produce good quality material. It's yep. been a big step up in the latest upgrade,
yep.
but it's still, and it sort of goes off on its own little path, and,
yep.
you know, it's sort of got to say, hang on, stop, I don't want you to do that. I just,
yeah,
yeah. you know,
so yeah, it gets it really, wrong. It gets it wrong.
You've got to learn sure. the technique. Of how to work with it
yep.
to get the most out of it. And I'm really pleased that I invested the time last year to read about it, read how other people are using it, read how they create prompts, and, you know, to get the most out of it, because that has made a big difference. And then with the change to our service offering, we're implementing new technology as well. Like, I used to spend a lot of time, maybe up to 40% of my week talking to people, right? And that's really just too much. So I made a rule to myself, you know, sort of last year, some stage, I don't want to spend any more than 20% of my week, you know, doing the talking and chasing up people. So I just stumbled across this piece of technology, which was like a quiz. At the time, it occurred to me, and I did that through going to someone else's website, and I went through the quiz process. And then I thought, wow, this is such an amazing process. What if I applied this process to asking people if they were, you know, grant ready? And so we started using that platform to provide people with a, you know, free service on Check Your Grant Readiness. And it's on the website there, you'll see on the front page. And then that led me to think, wow, we could, what if we could use that same questioning platform to channel our leads from the website into that? And I could ask a whole bunch of questions and filter these leads, and then decide how these leads could be categorized. And, you know, some leads, obviously, you know, they're a waste of time. They just don't, they're not prepared. Others, they know exactly which grant they want to go for. They've got some preparation done already. You know, they're the ones that deserve my time, because, you know, we can get them going on a grant and right. you know, hopefully help them get to success and avoid me spending and chewing up time with the other cohort who are just not ready and they need to go away and do something else. So
can I sort of interrupt you there? What are the mistakes that people make, or what are the things that they haven't got ready and yet expect you to wave your magic wand and put, you know, 100,000 or whatever it is in their bank through a grant? So what are generally the bits where you go, look, you know, I can't help you? I mean, we had a conversation, which is how we really met, where we, you know, the area we're working in just really, to your knowledge, didn't have a grant, which was fine. It saved me in days and days of researching it, I guess, and then still not being 100% sure that there wasn't something out there for us. But generally, is it because I know your function. I've never done I've written a few grants myself, I've never acted as a grant writer, but I know the function through the Accelerating Commercialization Program that I was a facilitator on. So by osmosis, and very rarely did I bump into a grant writer of any real value. But a couple of you out there, really brought your A game, which was fantastic. But I found through my dealings, particularly with clients that we were trying to, evaluate suitability for the program, that there was a lot of naivety, a lot of expectation for something for nothing, that there was not really going to be any scrutiny, and they could say whatever they wanted, and there was some sort of an entitlement there, without going too much off track with this. But then it required me, because I was getting paid by the government, to be a little bit diplomatic about how ugly their child is, and try and give them some guidance. So they actually walked away feeling that they had got some value. But you must bump into that. So I'm just wondering, what are the obvious sort of top three things that people really get wrong when they come to you?
I think people have this expectation that the grant is a bit of an entitlement. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a very competitive process. And I've often thought, you know, what's the best sort of preparation for people to consider to be in a position to be actually at a point where a grant might be something that they could go for. Mm-hmm. And I get people coming, and what I've found since I've had the inquiry funnel quiz questionnaire going on is that one of the questions in the process is, tell us about your business briefly. And then the next question is, tell us about the project you'd like to have a grant for. And the system will allow people to come back if they abandon the process. So it automatically sends out an email saying, you forgot to finish, come back and finish it. We often get people finishing at that point. Right. What's your project? So they go through the first seven questions, provide me with their company details or something, and they get to the project and bang, they don't know what they want.
I've got no project. Yep.
And so having this concept around what is a grant going to do for your business is the first step, right? And once you've got that, then looking at how much does it cost, you know, and getting some quotes. Mm-hmm. And so many people come to me, and again, it's another question in the questionnaire, have you got any costs? What's your cost of your projects? Often get, you know, various things there. And then when I talk to them, I say, well, so how'd you arrive at that cost? And oh, it's my gut feeling or whatever.
Okay.
Again, it doesn't work like that. You've got to go away and do that. And then once you've got the concept of what you want to do and you've got some costs, and you know that leads to a budget, and basically that becomes your roadmap, that's your project plan. And then you get to that point where you've got a project plan. People who come to me at that point are well equipped, and they're the ones you can sit down and have a really good conversation and say, with this kind of project and at these costing levels and this kind of execution plan, you're lucky, this this program here kind of aligns well with what you want to do.
Right.
And that alignment is a really key, because it's often that people will come to me and they want to change their business to get a grant.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right? To put the cart
it's
before the
wrong
horse.
Way to do it, right? Yeah, so you know, often teaching people that, look, this is not the right, you know, you really need to have a business strategy.
Yep.
And once you've got your business strategy, you've got an idea of what you want to do with the business, and then we find a grant to help you get where you want to go.
Right.
Not the other way around.
Yep.
So there's some fundamentals, you know, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff, of course. But
yeah,
if you get through that part, and you know, then you're very well prepared, and your mindset's in the right place.
Yeah. So you cover just Australian grants, federal and state, I presume, or do you look at international ones as well?
I haven't looked at international to any degree. I've had a look at a couple. But yeah, it's something that maybe in the future, you know, because there's still so much to do here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And despite that, the grants have kind of dried up at some of the state levels recently, particularly in Victoria, New South Wales and South Australia.
Mm.
WA and Queensland are still active. Federally, it's been a bit dry for a while, and finally the Industry Growth Program opened up in December, and now the National Reconstruction Fund is available, and there's not a grant. It's a similar process, and I've got one client who I'm working with on that one. So there's still a lot of things going on here. And then as soon as a grant opens, like at the moment in Victoria, there's the Regional Tourism Infrastructure Fund. Now, it's been open already for just on 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken to a number of prospects about this, and it never ceases to amaze me how long people wait until the last minute before they decide they want to go ahead with something.
Right.
So 4 weeks to go, and then suddenly I'm getting people contacting me and saying, oh, I want to go for this, you know, grant, and I've got this particular project. And then it's like, well, you know, there's not enough time.
Yep.
So that's why the government has allowed, you know, 8 weeks, because they know how much time is required. So that's the other worst thing that people can do when it comes to grants, is that just leave it to the last minute.
Yep.
And I often find that 1-2 weeks before the end of a deadline, I get people ringing about this, whatever grant it is.
Yep.
And inevitably I can't help them, because I'm already busy helping those that I'm already signed up weeks before and they've done the right thing. And then, you know, these people come along and expect that I'm just there at the drop of a hat, which it isn't the case. A grant writer needs time to produce quality outputs. You know, like everybody else, we need to get paid in a reasonable way. And to come to a grant writer a week before and then, you know,
expect magic.
And then, you know, come on a Friday before the Friday they're cut off, and then you say, look, can you pay the deposit by Monday?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they say, oh yeah, yeah. And then of course I don't, you know, and it's, you end up wasting your time. So,
what's the business model? So how do you get paid? It's not success only, obviously.
No. Well, my fee structure is based on a preparation fee and a success fee. And that's completely negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have some approaches in terms of, you know, the level of grant, and, you know, what's the overall sort of fee I'm looking at. And then I'd split that up across those two.
Yep.
And then, you know, in my case, I've developed a number of different options for people to be able to pay, because I found that, you know, not one option fits everyone, and so give them the choice of how they want to pay, and then that sort of
like
works
a weekly
well.
Or monthly sort of or weekly, I guess,
installment plan, or broken down over installments in terms of success, especially because usually those payments are a lot higher than the preparation fee.
Yeah,
so
sure.
That can, you know, if they're not managed properly, and I always try to make people aware, look, if you were successful, then you just want to make it clear that this is the what you're up for, and you know, we don't want to get to that side and then suddenly like, oh, I wasn't clear on that.
Yeah Sign here,
sorry, it's written in the budget.
So as a rule of thumb, what percentage is it, like a 5% of the total grant? For, you know, 100 grand would cost you 5, or how does it, or is
it varies? It varies. It can be anywhere from 0.5% to 15%,
right,
depending on the level of grant.
Right, I guess. I guess too, if it's a look, I've seen this 100 times before and I've got a template and it's just an afternoon's worth of work versus it's a meaty. I guess it doesn't happen very often. I guess a really meaty grant. So my understanding, just to, going back to the industry growth program, so they've opened the doors now, and I believe the queue is quite long now, because there was a delay in that second stage where they actually get the grant, they get the advice, so everybody's jumping in for the advice. Have the committee started meeting?
No, the committee hasn't had a meeting yet, as far as I'm aware. And I believe that they're now like somewhere in the 2,000 to 2,500. The last time I did one a few weeks ago was 2030 or something. So, but I suspect that a lot of those are not ready to go for a grant yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a handful at this stage, and of that, half of them are only contemplating going for a grant because there's a little bit of a hurdle to go through to get to that point. And that is the evaluation process that they have called the advisory services. And it's been cleverly set up so that the expression of interest is quite, from my perspective, it's very straightforward and it's very, it just gets to the point. You know, have you got an innovation? What does it tell us what it is? And how does it align with the National Reconstruction Fund priorities?
Right.
And by the way, what do you want help from us for? Very, very straightforward. Three really key questions. They don't muck around. They don't ask for a whole lot of stuff that's irrelevant. And you just got to answer those questions. So I've had one client come back. They said, it's not innovative enough. We're not interested. I had another one come back. Oh, it doesn't align with the National Reconstruction Funds. Sorry, you're not going to.
It's primarily manufacturing, creating capability around manufacturing.
It's all manufacturing oriented.
Yeah.
And the other key factor is the innovation focus. And then you've got to be really clear what sort of help you want from them, right? And, you know, there's very specific guidelines, as you would know from the Accelerating Commercialization Program, around the activities that are supported or not. They're very similar. So they're filtering out a lot of people. So my guess is that even though we're up to like 2,500, that maybe only half of them are kind of going to the next stage. Mm. And
then even a smaller percentage would get to the committee.
Well, I've already had, you know, I'm down to 2.5 or 3. Of that, one of them has said, oh, we don't want to go through the evaluation because we don't want to waste that. We don't want to spend the time with that.
Yep.
And
there's an opportunity cost there, right? It's an opportunity cost there.
Well, that's right.
Because there's a gamble whether you get it or not.
Well, that evaluation is just simply like a business review, right? And then you get the ticket to go and apply for the grant.
Mm.
And so my guess is that they haven't got enough candidates up to that point where they've been through the evaluation and they're ready to apply for the grant, and that's why they haven't opened the grants yet.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that TikTok, right? So if I've come to you and I'm, you know, I've got something quality, we get through the first stage, we get through the second stage, and now, say I'm manna from heaven, right? It's an A plus application, but they need 20 to go to the committee to make it worthwhile for the committee to come together. Well, I'm gonna die on the vine. I'm gonna go, okay, well, I'll either find my money somewhere else, and I don't know what the need for funding piece is. I'll either find my money from somewhere else, or I'll. It's over. This project's over. We're going to have to allocate our resources to keep the business and the lights on, or we close. And I saw that happen too.
Yeah, definitely. The you raise an interesting point there, and it sort of is around how people need to think long term when it comes to grants. It's I do get a lot of inquiries where people want to turn things around in 4 weeks. And then when I say to them, look, if you want to go for this grant, it's going to be a 3 to 6 month process.
If you have a self-managed superannuation fund or business and are considering including Bitcoin on your portfolio or balance sheet and want to do it safely and cost-effectively, contact Digital Asset Custody Solutions today. Digital Asset Custody Solutions taps into over 10 years of experience in digital assets, including Bitcoin and stablecoins. They are also the only provider of digital asset attestations to help you when it comes time to submit your returns. visit www.dacs.io or call 1-300-346-495 for more information today. Get off zero Bitcoin today with Digital Asset Custody Solutions.
And for example, the Victorian government did the Manufacturing Growth Program last December, and they just announced the results 2 weeks ago. I think it was the Friday before last. Now, they haven't even publicized that information. Right. So my clients who I helped have all got the results. Some win, some didn't, but they haven't made it public yet. So that's 6 months.
Yeah, you know, there's no sense of urgency.
They work off.
It's nice.
Well, you know, so, and these are projects that are going to be starting probably in September, October. So, as a minimum, it's 3 to 9 months. I did a couple on the Accelerating Commercialization Program, and one of them took us 12 months. Exactly. It was almost 12 months to the day from the time the client first contacted me to the point when they got awarded the grant. Another one was a bit quicker, but there is this long, drawn out process.
Part of that's on the client, though.
It's both ways.
Yeah.
There is that element of the client not being prepared, and therefore we need to spend the time to get them up to scratch,
right,
or get them up to that competitive positioning. And then there is sometimes the time that the government takes to assess the applications. And, you know, they say in the published guidelines, they'll say, oh, it takes 16 weeks, and then it takes them, you know, 32 weeks instead. So so that's the kind of point you're making there, is that the client or the, you know, businesses chasing grants need to be prepared for having to wait this time out and then weigh that up against the opportunity cost. And I have had, you know, clients from time to time where I say to them, look, I don't think it's worth you even doing this, because if you're only going for a small amount of money, and then you've got to wait 7 months to get to that, and you know, the chances of getting that are not guaranteed. And then you get to that point, and you're going to be really disappointed and upset because you've missed the opportunity to just invest the money yourself and then start earning the outcome that.
Yeah.
Right. So
I
sometimes advise people just go and do it. Don't waste
your
time.
Yeah. I have a bit of a view on this. It boils down to incentive, right? So you have an incentive to do a good job because you want referrals, you want to get the clients, right? If I go to the government with a grant request, for me it's free money. So I've got to think, okay, I think I've got everything I need. Free money. I don't, you know, so I avoid having to dilute my capital, you know, my equity within the business. It's free money. The incentive on the government is we want a good story and a photo opportunity, which I don't think governments, and I say this with some reservation because I think sometimes they do get it right, but in general, the allocation of capital from individuals who are not motivated by getting a return on the investment means that there are other drivers, social equality, all legitimate things, but not necessarily commercial things. So the ideologies, and without making a sort of value judgment on the ideologies, and I think it's important to represent the community, they're really not strictly capitalist motivating activities. What do you think about government taking equity or government partnering with venture capitalists and saying you go first, and we'll quickly follow? So if they want $1 million, if you allocate $500,000, we'll allocate $500,000. But the incentive is either equity or a kind of tag along with a properly formed investment group. Or a bit of both, where there is a dividend to the people of Australia or whatever country is doing it, rather than strictly trying to follow guidelines that have been made by bureaucrats who have never really faced the heat of not getting paid on the 15th of the month, you know, and are kind of disconnected. And I don't say that in a disparaging way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, public servants have an important role. But I think it boils down to incentives. So that's my view, obviously. But it really is a question for you. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Well, I haven't had a lot of experience with the whole sort of government equity stakeholding aspects, but there are some programs, and like there's the North Australian Infrastructure Fund, which is something of that nature. And I've had a few, less than a handful of clients interested, and they've had projects in those area in that area of Northern Australia, and we've reached out to them, and I've established a contact with the program, and they have this minimum sort of threshold that if your project isn't $15 million at least, then
Go home.
we're not interested, right? And they just recently invested, I think, 150 million bucks thereabouts in a couple of airports around the region. And there was another client I had who had a 20-something million dollar project, and they sort of went cold on us. There's the National Reconstruction Fund is an equity sort of. They have one stream, which is equity, another one, which is debt. I think it works for some people. I've got a client who's got a really big project and interested in that one. It's like, sub 100 million. And, that is going to mean that they can bring forward their plans. And, that's going to be a real big economic stimulus for what they're doing and the region that they're operating in, which is great. So if the project and where it sits aligns well, and then you've got that stimulus from the government in terms of economic, it works. But I think it's depends on the size of the project, like and then you've got in Victoria the Breakthrough Victoria Fund, which has lately got a bit of bad publicity because I got $2 billion and they didn't really invest a lot of it yet. And they I've had a few people interested in that program, and they have this kind of gatekeeping process where you submit your proposal and then we'll get back to you. And then they send you an email saying, oh, we're not interested. There's no feedback. And it's you do your best to sort of prepare, and I've worked with a couple, spend a bit of time. And I, even as a grant writer, I feel, well, oh, that's a bit disappointing because we didn't get an opportunity to say, well, why didn't we get to the next step? And the client's just devastated, and
And
they
it's
think, oh,
public
it's
money,
all
right?
because of
It's
you,
public money that they're chewing
That's it.
through and public time.
That's it.
And so
That's
your
it.
constituent, I think you deserve, it's not like you send out an application and you get crickets
Yeah.
back because it's just not economic for them to even hit reply, right? Government have
That's it. I think the whole concept of free money is one that is widely misunderstood. And if we break that, unpack that a little bit, first of all, grants tranches or grant funding is taxed. So in the early days when I was doing this, before doing it 100% on a grant helper, one of my clients, I got him a huge, actually got him $2 million. And it was great, a Victorian client. And then I remember, the client getting really upset with me when it came tax time. They said, oh, you didn't tell us that we had to pay tax on this.
Oh,
And
they
I
treat it
said,
as revenue. They treat it as revenue.
that's right,
Is
it's
that
treated as revenue.
is that always
And
the
so,
case? I never really bumped into that.
always the case.
Right.
And so, two
Give with
million
one hand
bucks
and
is
take
a
away
lot of tax, right?
the other.
And then they were really upset because they had, done their project to a point where it was pretty kind of tight, in terms of the cash flow. So they hadn't accounted for that tax. And once you put that into the equation, it just meant the whole thing was completely a different ball game. So now I make a point of saying, oh, yeah, you will get taxes, And the other aspect of that is that, apart from the tax, is that the cost to actually secure the grant money. Now, you either have to spend the time yourself, right? So what's your hourly rate worth, right? You're worth a couple of hundred, $500 an hour, and you spend 40 hours doing it. So what's that cost? So, there's $5,000 or $10,000, whatever you want to value yourself at, versus get a grant consultant to coordinate it and be the project manager of the grant submission and pay them $5,000 or $10,000 to do it. Either way, you've got to pay either by yourself, investing your time, or that person coming in and project managing it for you. And so there's never any free money, whichever way you look at it, right?
Yeah,
and then of course the opportunity cost comes into it. You could end up, you know, foregoing revenue by waiting through that period,
exactly,
and that's another, you know, where's the free money in that? So
it occurs to me what we were talking about with regards to equity-based funding from the government. Those big infrastructure projects are—they're kind of their sweet spot. They like things that they can point to, take photos of. If I come to them with some sort of digital innovation that's going to reshape the landscape of, if I was the guy that came up with AI 10 years ago and took ChatGPT to the government and said this is going to revolutionise the world, this is going to give Australia a competitive advantage from everything from cybersecurity, cyber warfare to mum and dad operations, they would have gone, what?
You're crazy.
We're not taking equity in that. But really, I probably would have only needed about $500,000 or something at the time, or $1 million. And for them, it's a rounding error. Yeah. It's a 0.0000011.
I think the governments are very risk adverse, and you know, there's a lot of maybe some errors that have been made in the past when it comes to grants. And you know, I feel really, you know, a bit sorry for some small businesses who haven't got the trading history sometimes that's required to get a grant, or, you know, they don't have any co-contribution that they can put towards it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a great project, but they're just not ticking the boxes in those places. And sometimes I have to tell them, look, you know, your chances of getting this are diminished because of these factors.
Yeah,
and
they'll weight them.
You know,
that's it.
So, you know, it can be a great thing. And I think there's very much what appears to be a sort of like a show and tell thing going on at the moment. And tourism is another area where there's been a bit of investment by some of the governments. Mm-hmm. You can see the outcomes of all kind of really, you know, related to some of the iconic places. Like, to use an example, without demeaning it, the Phillip Island Penguin Parade area gets a lot of focus, right? And they've had a lot of investment over the years. And yet there are some splendid concepts and ideas going on in other areas that are only asking for a small amount of money. They're not asking for tens of millions of dollars, and the government is not interested.
Nobody got sacked for hiring IBM, right? Just go with the number.
So it is a case often that they're looking for this kudos that's associated with the recipient.
Yep.
And you know, we often see the press releases and then, you know, the occasional news broadcast about, you know, how they supported so-and-so from a foreign country to set up office in the city, and they're going to employ XYZ numbers. But there are lots of other ventures going on that, you know, whilst they don't have the name behind them, the intent and the ability for them to contribute, you know, is significant, but they don't get up because they haven't got the showcasing ability that the government's sometimes looking for.
Well, plus also, Steve, there is a bit of a disconnect with reason here. So technology, we talked about technology at the beginning of the conversation, is a deflationary factor. So I didn't have to hire someone for $50,000 or $100,000. I didn't have to hire five people to do what I'm just doing now with a virtual assistant and ChatGPT. And so my innovation, as a consequence, and my marginal cost for bringing on a new client is tiny now versus before I had to hire. So if I've got just one more client, I've got to hire Fred Schnurdbergler or whoever, and there's a chasm there, right? Where I go, okay, now I'm burning through money because I've got too many clients. I'm actually burning through money, whereas the marginal cost for ChatGPT or Gmail or whatever to put on a new client is nothing. It's virtually zero, whereas the traditional businesses, but the grants, particularly government grants, are looking for employment. So so you're looking for employment, but no, I'm actually going to destroy jobs. I'm going to destroy jobs, but I'm going to create tax revenue.
It's an interesting dilemma, and I feel that there's a slight change going on in terms of focus on jobs now, because the technology is being recognised in some of the grant programs. In Queensland, for example, they have had a program or two programs recently in the last 6 months that have been very much focused on the technology adoption, and not heavily weighted towards jobs. Obviously, jobs gets the Guernsey, but it's not like in the old days where in Victoria, for example, it used to be jobs first. How many jobs are you going to create? And then there'd be a very clear ratio about, okay, you're going to create 10 jobs and you're $100,000. Oh, okay, so that's $10,000 ahead we're investing in the jobs. And so it was all connected to that. And then someone who came along and said, well, I want $100,000, but I'm only going to employ one person because I've got all this technology. They said, oh, that's $100,000 for one person. That's too much. We're not going to support you. And
Even if
so
you're going to drop another
there was
million
that.
bucks in taxes in their pocket.
Exactly. And it was that bias that existed for many years, sort of in the early days of grants. I think that's changed a little bit now. And now the emphasis is on efficiency, productivity, exports, volume, increasing turnover, get that 25% increase for 5 years or whatever it is. If you can't demonstrate that, then you're not in the right set. So the jobs have sort of taken a slightly backseat priority to these other things, which is great because it means that some of these other projects that are not geared towards jobs, and so they've got a chance of getting up now. But the technology certainly makes a big difference to any business, and increasing efficiency, productivity. And in my own case, being able to filter and categorize clients and put my time and effort into those clients who are deserving it and who have that opportunity of, really going for a grant versus spending time with people who, just want to suck it all the information out of you and don't end up being a client at the end of the day. And it gets to the point where you sort of think, my time is worth something. And so how do you manage that? I've got to a point now where I don't have my phone number on the website or the Calendly link, which I used to. I'll tell you, so the phone number is there, but it's buried somewhere, and you've got to find it. So, and I've had several people come and criticize me and say, why can't we call you? And why can't I email you? And it's because inevitably, you end up investing time, and they think it's you're just sitting there waiting. It's like customer service, and but it's flat out like you work at home every night, get up in the morning at 4 o'clock sometimes, or even work on the weekends or go for days without having a break, and people think you're just sort of sitting there, I don't know, whatever they think, but the technology allows you to mean that you can filter all of the inquiries in a way that's going to hone in to the real prospects that matter and enable me to. And that means then that I can actually work with more clients. So I can help more clients that are deserving and that have the basics in place that we talked about before around the concepts, around the financial planning and the sort of execution planning. They're the ones who deserve the attention and the guidance and the project management and have a chance of getting the grant versus someone who's just ill prepared.
I find the dentists are a great example of that key man or key woman setup where all that, their job is to look in your mouth and use their expertise. But the tools are handed to them, the administration's done for them, the setting, the collection of the money. They do none of that, none of that. All they do is they walk in, geared up to do the job, and then on to the next one. And it's a one-way conversation too with dentistry.
Really good example.
Yeah. So that key man approach I see as this new world that you can have
I think so.
people
Yeah,
like
I
yourself.
agree. And I think my business is going that way. So that, it's just then giving all the energy to those clients who, are ready and prepared and deserve the attention to get the project, to a point where it gets supported. And setting up things like the technology, is one thing. You've got to have a little bit of time available to do that, and it can be time consuming. And so we go through sort of bursts. When I say we, my VA, and the experience of getting a VA was one which was, if I can just digress for a sec, was because I during COVID, the Melbourne Council or Chamber of Commerce, whatever it was, they offered this kind of free 4-workshop program with with an experienced management consultant. And, you know, because I was sort of like down at the bottom of my journey then, I signed up for that, and it was 4 free sessions. We did like 4 2-hour sessions over a period of a few months, and that was really, really helpful to kind of like clarify a few things. And one of the things we did was he made me go away and think about the process that I want to put into place. And so there was some, you know, 4 or 5 key steps to the process of how I onboard a client, what I do with them.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. And he said, okay, now which parts are the ones that you really want to do that you add value to? Because at that time I was trying to do the whole lot.
Right.
And then it made me realize that if I can outsource this part or that part or automate this part and that part, then I can have more time to do this part where I can add value to clients and I can extract more value for myself. And so that was the beginning of understanding how to set up a process. You know, it seems really kind of a long time ago now, but it was only just 3-4 years ago that, you know, everything was manual. And now the systems that we've got set up, we get inquiries on a daily basis, a handful to 10 inquiries a day.
That's great.
And out of those, there's 1 or 2 that get to to get to see me. Right. And then I have to wait a week, unless it's something that's, you know, hot right now, in which case I'll call them and we'll do it manually. But so the next step after I got that was to then start outsourcing some of those things. And I started with the local people through Sidekicker. And then, you know, that sort of led to me needing that assistance and thinking, well, you know, maybe a VA is the way to go. And then it sort of transitioned to the VA. They came on 20 hours a week and now they're kind of working almost full time with me. And so, you know, they carry that. And so if I was to sort of undo all of that, I would only probably be able to achieve 1/10 of what I can achieve now without that support system of the VA and without the technology that we've and the systems that we've created around the technology. We use a CRM system. We use an electronic direct email system. You know, we did broadcasts. We do quite a few things out there that, you know, we don't charge for, and it's like disseminating information. It's all part of the marketing lead generation, of course, right? But we do it to quite a significant degree compared to, and I'm trying to blow my tongue for it, but compared to other competitors in this space, we're doing that to a high degree. So, you know, key man operation. I like that. As a key man operation, fundamental to success is finding 1 or 2 key people who can support you in a very cost-efficient way. And by outsourcing it, in my case, it means I don't have to go through all the administration. I just get an invoice once a month from the company that the hiring company.
Yep.
And then we've gone through, analyzed technology, and we've implemented the technology, and we're now using that technology to go forward. And we've spent quite a bit of time over the last few months analyzing how the business are using this technology to leverage their knowledge base and share that information in a way that actually extracts value instead of just giving it away for free.
I think that's a great comment to wind it up. That was fantastic. I think that anybody who listens to that is really going to get some deep insights. You've prompted some thinking on my consulting side of my business. So maybe I should get an invoice from you. But I really do appreciate your time. Would you like to let listeners know how they can reach out and how they would where they need to go to contact you and see if you can help them with their grants?
Yeah, sure. Thanks very much, Chris. I really enjoyed the conversation and the opportunity to talk about Grant Helper. And the best place to connect with me is at granthelper1word.com.au. and click on the contact page and lodge an inquiry through there. And then, yeah, depending on where you're at, you'll get an opportunity to talk to me directly.
Fantastic. All right. All the best. And I think we'd like to have you on again. Okay, that was my conversation with Steve Dowling from Grant Help. I hope you really enjoyed that. I certainly did. I got some great insights and ideas and some of the stuff that I do, and even for some of the people that I help. Until next time, this is Entrepreneurship with Christo.